good afternoon. I am Krista Hewitt, and this is Ears on Art. Today is part two of our interview with Joe Caracas. Joe is a professor emeritus from the architecture department at Cal Poly and a sculptor-painter. Last week, we discussed his philosophy of architecture, and this week are centering on his sculpture. Stephen and I always find it interesting to interview people who have seemingly two different disciplines and how they influence each other or how they might be quite different but very important to them. Joe and his wife live in San Luis Obispo, but I met up with him at his personally designed second home / studio in Cambria. Here now is Joe Caracas. We've referenced the connection with architecture and just about everything else. So it is evidenced by what is in this room and in your studio that you really enjoy creating, doing sculpture, and believe some two-dimensional work. So was that already in process before you really got into architecture, or is this something that you've just had fun developing over time?
If you look at the sculpture and the paintings, some of it is like, I wonder what they looked like. For example, the Greeks personified night. What does a night look like? I thought. I came up with this. She is a beautiful black lady. And I read about the Trojan War. Mm-hmm. Well, over there is Helen of Troy. There's Paris. Agamemnon. There's two sides to their faces. One is sad or anger. The other is joy. So Helen, in one case, she's smiling. On the other side of her face, there's tears. So this is the way I would see them. But I never saw a picture before. That is Nike. That's a Victoria of victory. And she was very fickle. She would go from camp to camp. I mean, the Greeks knew this. And so this tries to show her in those two modes. One was she's smiling, and one is she's sneering. And the fact that she flew from camp to camp, some of those on her head are real feathers, meaning cast in bronze. So that was the idea, to take that story and make it into a piece of sculpture.
That makes me think that there's quite a bit of reading that you've been doing.
I've always read a lot. I always wondered, the three wise men, what did they look like?
You know, good question.
On this one piece of sculpture, there's three faces, and they're the wise men. Approach to view the birth of Christ, he's in awe. There's another person here who kind of accepts this, and he's middle-aged. This one is an older guy. He's smiling, and he's saying, I knew this all the time. I knew that. So that was my notion of, this is what they look like. There's certain creatures that I think are marvelous. For example, the snake is mm-hmm. incredible. They have snakes that glide. So I'm fooling around with the form, like, what would be, it can't be a stick.
Right.
But their curvature and the way they move and the proportions of their heads and their body and so on, they compare with, Brancusi's bird in flight,
right.
You know, the elegant polishing of it. They're out there doing it. They don't need a sculptor to. They're really hard to do. They are wood.
Oh, and they are over 3 feet long and. Yeah, very slender and very, very snake.
Snaky.
Snaky is.
This is also along the lines of whimsy. You know Mondrian's work. Mm-hmm. Okay. He never deviated from the horizontal and the vertical, ever. You know, he might have did horizontal vertical in a triangular format, diamond shape, but he always kept that. And at the end, he started having a social message. So you got Broadway Boogie Woogie, which encompasses his idea of proportion and color and so on, but it's got another dimension to it, which is one of interaction of smaller components. What did that inspire? This is whimsy. I've got the rectangular organization that Mondrian had, except it's on a slant. That violates his basic principles. And on top of it are these gummy worms all over the place. So it's gummy worm boogie woogie. I enjoyed doing it, and I like, you know, to contemplate it every so often. So that's in a way, it's not a spoof. It's a recognition of a major contribution to art. This is Mondrian. But I just flipped it over.
I'm wondering if the sculpture allows you a lot more of that freedom to explore the whimsy or just explore the what-ifs or the who-are type of questions that are going through your head as opposed to when you are constructing a house or a studio?
The house always has to be attached to utility. This is Vitruvius from way back. And those shape what you want. This is why this house is also attending to the sequence of movement. Now, a painting, I suppose you could do it with Picasso's Guernica. You know, you walk from one side to another, but it's not three-dimensional. It has limitations. By and large, most sculpture cannot allow you this sequential kind of experience that architecture allows. And obviously they have different limitations. There's one that comes really close. They call it the Bean in Chicago on the lakeshore. It is this monstrous stainless steel, looks like a mushroom, but you can walk under it and it's polished. And so there's space there, but it has one other interesting dimension. If you are standing on the park side, this is Grant Park, looking at the Bean, which has got to be 50 feet tall, you get a reflection of the forest. So you have Bean, Chicago skyline, a reflection of the forest. You go around the other side and you get a reflection of the city, but you're looking towards a forest. And this shape is a beautiful contrast with both the built environment and the, you know, the trees that characterize the park.
I can certainly envision that as you're talking about it.
You've got to go there.
Well, fortunately, I've been to Chicago many times, but I haven't seen that particular piece of sculpture.
Recent, but it is a marvel of sculpture, and it's so simple. It's basically a mushroom, but it's gorgeous.
Less is more, and it becomes more and more and more.
There's a great beauty in distilling something down to its basic, unconfused components. That is a good search. Sculptors have done it. Painters have done it. Architects have done it. But, you know, it oftentimes flips. And some of the architecture you see today is, there's so much going on, you say, gee, well, what's the message? We are dealing not with pure art as we know it. There's always a commercial dimension to it. The people who are paying for it, they have their own ideas. And sometimes they are not exactly what the architect wants to do, but he wants to get paid.
Artists have that with commissions as well. How do you resolve it for yourself?
I just do it for myself, but it is a dimension of my life I couldn't do without. You know, you got to have some pleasure. It's like writing a book, writing music, performing, dancing. It's the same sort of thing. Primitive people do all that. As sparse as their material being might be, they still have that dimension and enjoy it. So that's why, you know, that explains it.
Have you taken on a commission that then just went sour to you in the sense of, okay, I'm going to keep doing this, but just, I wish I weren't?
When I started working, you know, full-time to make money in architecture and teaching, it kind of slowed things down. But when I was going to school in Berkeley, my roommate and I were wandering around San Francisco and went to the Artist Co-op Gallery. And we're walking around and talking, and this little lady is following us. And by the time we were almost out the door, she says, "Do you boys paint?" And we said, "Oh, yeah. Bring your stuff in." So we brought our stuff in, and both of us were members, and I would sell stuff. But it was just fun. I wasn't trying to make money or anything like it, but you met a lot of interesting people, some really good artists. What are they doing? They're janitors. Why are they janitors? Because they can paint and hold down the job.
And I certainly appreciate that aspect of just, I think we're really talking about just following the joy, following the passion. But if there were times that you went into a architectural situation, a commission for somebody to do a house or whatever, and then you just kind of went, this isn't going to work, or I've got to make it work even though I'm struggling with what they want and what I think is logical.
I had some great professional experiences. In Chicago, I worked with Perkins and Will and worked with some people that were students of Frank Lloyd Wright. A wonderful experience. I even got to do a whole building myself. The person who was running the job, it was a college campus. After working with him for a while, he said, okay, you do it. Let's see. Very happy about that. When I came out to the Bay Area, I worked for the Oakland City Planning Department and got to do some really interesting work, especially in the redevelopment areas, where your efforts were recognized and incorporated into this conglomeration of participants. You know, there's lots of people working on the same stuff or parts of it. It's hard to describe. You do occasionally something turns up, but I was not going to spend the time out there beating the bushes to make a life.
Well, I can really appreciate that because the teaching was very front and center and something that was not just done to give a paycheck. But with the commissions that do come my way, they're usually people finding me versus my going out and trying to make it happen. And when that works, it's just been very pleasurable. And if somebody's saying, would you make me a buffalo nickel belt buckle? I say, no. There is that ability to cut it off at the pass before it begins. And
well, I've had situations like that where I want this and I want this and I want this. And you know, my thought was, look, I'm not a draftsman. They are absolutely necessary, but you need somebody else. I can't go along that route. But somebody sought you out because they saw in your work something that they wanted. It happens in all the, I would call them arts, where somebody comes in and says, write me a piece of music like this. And it's done. They do it. But it's different than if it has a different origin where you're not so practically committed. Think of this. How many artists, and I'm sure you know a lot, and I know a lot, they will do a different job just to not be homeless, but they do their stuff.
I've just finished up a commission now that was very touching to me. It was a memorial project for this woman's brother.
Yeah.
And to be entrusted with that was very, very special.
You know, I never thought of a memorial kind of project. It never even entered until this moment.
But in a way, you've been making memorials to, or at least homages, maybe that's a different
homage.
Twist on it, but it's your kind of memorializing people that you had no ability to ever meet and may have even been fictional,
but
they were important to
you. The Egyptian pyramids, they are the ultimate memorial. I mean, but that's interesting. I should start thinking about it.
Well, I think there's a lot there to honor in our lives, whether it's specific people or events.
Yeah, you know,
the field's wide open.
Yeah.
Can we go see your studio?
Sure. I did the Chinese, what do they call it, astrological figures. This is a dragon. I tried to make him an American dragon. He's a little different than the Chinese.
Were these bronze pieces cast at Cuesta?
Yeah, they're at Cuesta. I've done that whole series of, you know, the ram and... It was fun doing them. And again, it's like, what do you think they look like?
Right.
You know, this is a stone I found in Moonstone Beach. And this is a Moonstone Venus. I have done very little to it.
Huh.
That's the way it was. And a friend of mine gave me this piece of wood, gave it to me, and he says, do a giraffe.
Well,
I couldn't do a giraffe.
You ended up with embracing figures. Do you remember, did it sit for a while with you and talk to you, or did you just instantly see something in it?
Michelangelo says it talked to me.
Right.
What I really think is that there's some really complicated processing going in there, and that's the expression of it. It sat around for a while, and I kept looking at it, and finally this came out.
One of the questions that we're often intrigued with is what you do when you're stuck, when something is partway underway and then just stops talking to you, or you just can't get started?
Sometimes I hang in there and you work it out, but I've also just thrown it away. Sometimes I keep it as a landmark for humility. No, really.
I get it.
I have done some terrible stuff, but I keep them so that I can see where I've been. And not everything you do comes out the way you want it to.
Really?
No.
Oh,
no,
shucks. No. I've been hoping all along.
Well, I have the hope. If you're familiar with Cambria, every year they used to have a 927 show. They did not want traditional art.
Mm-hmm.
It might be zany. I've collected a bunch of strings and chords and so on. And this is, I wrapped them all around a oatmeal jar and a cup. And what this is hog tied.
Got it. It's a wonderful hog.
You should see some of the stuff that was presented. It was so exciting because they were not trying to do something that you hang on the wall. Very nice imagination throughout.
Oh, that's great. And it's wonderful to be in this room and just see the variety of things that you're exploring. And of course, our listeners can't see it, so it's only partially advantageous to describe it all. But, you know, from string and wrapped and paper and making use of found pieces of wood and other things to the cast bronze.
Well, they all have a sign of a visual, pleasurable, aesthetic possibility.
They do.
Yeah. I hope you can see the fun in this.
Oh, absolutely.
Here's this. At one time, there was a proliferation of coffee shops all over.
Still is.
I took the cups and, you know, put them there. And
a totem pole,
It's a totem pole.
To coffee cups. How terrific.
And it's not limited to just normal or normally abnormal people. You see that thing there? That's for people who own a canary and have a cat. So you see how the bird is safe?
Uh-huh.
The cat thinks about it and he's not going to do it.
The floor in this room is wonderfully bright and cheery, but I bet it had a reason for happening.
It was particle board. Terrible brown color, totally depressing. And so I had some spare paint buckets, and I ran around with a brush, a toilet brush, and spattered this stuff all over. And later on, I took these snap lines, and you see the snap lines all over. Now it's okay, and it works, because I can almost drop a whole meal here, and you will not see it.
It's how a studio floor needs to be.
So you can see the things in progress and so on.
Well, thank you so much. I've really appreciated this.
Thank you.
Our guest today has been Joe Caracas, Emeritus Cal Poly Architect and Sculptor Painter. He now has a wonderful studio in Cambria where he creates his art. To hear part one of this program, please go to the KCBX archives. The art community this week lost one of its giants, John Bernard, who filled his 93-plus years with an abundance of colorful, whimsical, and insightful imagery. He was truly a special man, and he will be very much missed. Thank you, John. I'm Krista Hewitt, and on behalf of co-host Stephen DeLuque, I want to thank you for listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio.